Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News podcast. Barry Murphy, which you hear from our news team. I'm joined on the line today by our news editor, Katrina Morrissey, deputy news editor, Amy Ford, sheep and schemes editor, Darren Carty, and news correspondents, Noel Barden and Declan O'Brien. Look, we've lots on the agenda for this week's podcast from across the farm sector. Plenty of reading in the paper and plenty of listening to come. Board BIA are set to ramp up farm audits, and we'll talk to Noel on that one in just a second. We'll also discuss Dawn's takeover of Kildare Chilling, the IFA AGM, sheep prices, new research on calculating farm emissions, and the latest on the ongoing saga surrounding Quilta's deal with Gresham House. A lot there to get through over the next 20 minutes or so. But first up, Noel, we'll head over to yourself. Look, you have some brilliant stories, Noel, in this week's paper. The main one being our lead story on page one, that Board BIA are to ramp up audits. Look, Noel, I think we were talking in the office, and you could see this one really riling up farmers who probably feel they have enough eyes on them as is already. And those Board BIA audits, as stands, take a lot of work from farmers. I suppose, where have they come from? Where has this change come from? And what do farmers need to know?
Yeah, so there's fairly big changes in the way for Board BIA audits. It looks like they're going a lot more sort of technological, that instead of farmers filling out the book as they would do before an inspection, and as they're buying in meal and using medicines and so on, that a lot of this data is going to be collected from a range of different sources, be it the department, the ICBF will be involved, dairy co-ops on that side of things, and there'll be a lot of data kind of moving behind the scenes. So the farmer won't necessarily see the workload increased in filling out the paperwork on that side of things, but a fairly big development that is planned for the Board BIA audits, and these changes are from 2024 onwards, the middle of 2024, as it's expected now. Another big aspect of these would be that every farm every 18 months will need to draw up a sustainability action plan. So this will be a plan that sets out where the farm's emissions are at the minute, where this is kind of benchmarked against the national average and against other farmers in the programme. And the plan itself then will have to lay out a series of measures that farmers could take to reduce their emissions. So this could be the incorporation of clover or spreading lime and bits and pieces like that. Now, it's not known yet what will happen if a farmer doesn't follow this plan. So if they do the plan up and maybe they do a couple of bits that's on it or nothing at all, will they lose their Board BIA quality assurance bonuses in the factory? It's not known yet, and Board BIA didn't say much in it when we went to them to ask for more details on the upcoming changes. Another new element of the on-farm audit will be animal welfare checks, where the auditor will check, particularly housed cattle, it seems. It'll check up on space requirements. It'll check, do kind of cattle docility checks, and check general animal condition. It has said that there could be some changes or some challenges, to be expected around the space requirements and another few elements of this, the animal welfare side of things.
It's a really interesting one, Noel. There's a lot in it, and I can even, you know, from, I'm sure for yourself in the same at home, Borby audits, there's a lot of work in them. You know, in practical terms, what exactly, you know, on the welfare side of things, you're saying, you know, that looking at housed cattle and that kind of thing, you know, it's just, is the Borbia being more fussy, or is it, you know, could you see these things actually coming into fruition?
Well, it's tough to tell at this stage, and we have put some of that to them, and we didn't get a lot back. It's they're saying that it's still a bit premature to comment when the plan is still being developed and it hasn't been signed off in full. But if they are looking for the sustainability action plan to be followed through, there could be significant costs there for farmers, and the whole system seems to be kind of going online. It is a digital sustainability platform, so elderly farmers, they might not be able to access this kind of stuff themselves, or even in terms of internet connection. So you can see farm advisors becoming a lot more involved in the Borbia side of things. And another very important thing that we didn't mention yet would be the Suckler Carbon Efficiency Programme. So this will replace BDGP and BEEPS. It'll open to farmers probably around March and close in May. But to join the new Suckler scheme, which is coming in under the cap, it's the five-year scheme. There will need to be, farmers will need to be a member of the Borbia Beef Quality Assurance Scheme. So that's the SBLOS that farmers might have heard about. So farmers will be asked to sign up to Borbia audits, essentially, for the next 5 years, an audit at least every 18 months, I think it is. But they won't know exactly what they're signing up to, because these changes aren't going to be fully finalised, Borbia expects, until the end of the year and signed off. So it'll be definitely one to watch to see when further details come out, because I suppose a lot of the questions you're asking, Barry, we don't have fully fleshed out answers to them. And to a certain extent, it'll take a while for a couple of farmers to go through it. Even on a pilot basis, it will be opened on a pilot basis at the end of the year to see what issues are cropping up, how long the audits are taking, and how strict they're going to be on farmers sticking to the plans and on the environmental side of things.
Yeah, I know it's definitely an interesting one, and while it mightn't be, the detail mightn't be known just yet, I suppose it is on the cards, and it's something farmers are going to be facing the coming months and years. And as you said to yourself, you're going to be chasing Borbia on this one to get more detail, and I'm sure we'll have more reporting on it in the weeks and months ahead. But look, Noel, you also have a really interesting piece there, a lot of newsy bits on page 14 from the Cattle Association of Veterinary Ireland's, or CAVI, conference. So there's such a group of cattle vets, essentially, and it was an interesting conference. You've lots of news from it. I saw their headline as well, that low EBI dairy herds are going to be advised to use beef AI on all cows. We were saying in the office yesterday, that's one that might really annoy some lads. What's the story there?
Yeah, so Doreen Carden from Munster Bovine, she gave a talk to the vets, and she covered off kind of the AI side of things and genetics and that, and how the vets can play a role in improving these things on farms. And one of the pieces of advice that she gave was that farmers that might be maybe in the bottom 20 or 40% of the national herd by EBI, so this is their herd average, is that maybe they should be using beef AI across the whole herd and buying in replacements, because essentially a lot of these farmers are so far behind, first of all, the national average, but then the best cows in the country, the top cows in terms of EBI, that it'll just take them too long to catch up. And when the herds at the top are moving so quickly, they could just end up being left further and further behind. Especially if there's fertility issues in these cows and all sorts of other issues that you know, they're really not hitting the targets. They're falling short of the national average. And she said that there's a risk that the top 20 or 40% of the herds in the country, that these could use beef bulls on very, very high EBI cows if they're not expanding anymore. So during expansion, there was a lot of dairy bulls being used, and especially in the top cohort of herds nationally. And there was a big market there for surplus heifers and that, and the farmers themselves needed surplus heifers beyond maybe 20% of their cow numbers if they were expanding. But if these farmers use beef bulls on everything from maybe the bottom 60% of cows, essentially, these cows would still be better off in terms of maximizing the genetics of the national herd. These cows, some of them at least, could be better put in calf to a dairy bull, a dairy AI bull, and the heifers off these cows sold to other farmers. So she was essentially getting at that there's a way to kind of maximize the EBI of the cows that are there, and maybe using beef bulls across an entire herd for a couple of years and buying in replacement heifers from a farmer with a higher EBI might be a way to kind of bump up your farm standing on the breeding side of things.
You know, there definitely seems to be a move away from dairy bulls. I know we were looking at getting a limousine bull at home ourselves there over the last few days, and talking to the last time we got a bull off, all his good ones are gone. They're all bought by dairymen. So seems a lot of lads are moving back to beef bulls for the dairy herd there. It's also, I suppose, Declan Maron there has a piece in this week's paper as well, folks, that calf rearing costs have gone up 44% since 2021. That's on page 5 of this week's paper. So I suppose it's all pointing towards maybe more dairy beef if there's more beef sires been used and less dairy ones. But look, thanks Noel for joining the podcast. We'll move on to Darren Carty, our sheep and schemes editor next, folks. And Darren, look, we've another big story in this week's paper from our colleague Adam Woods on page 1, and he reports that Don Meats is buying out Kildare Chilling. Look, this is one that a lot of lads will be interested in, particularly for the beef and sheep sectors, Darren. It's feared the move will weaken competition in the beef and sheep sector. Might that be the case?
Yes, Barry, definitely very real concerns from farmers. This is a story that has been doing rounds for many years now. I think we first wrote, 6 or 7 years ago that this was rumoured, but this stage, it seems to be at a really advanced stage at the moment. We believe that this might even have been submitted to the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission already, so that's something we're looking into. And as you say, very real concerns here. Kildare Chilling on the beef side, a factory that has the capacity to kill about 120,000 cattle. They wouldn't have been utilising that capacity in recent years. Maybe killing, we believe, around 60, 70,000 cattle. But they would have been sort of good players on the bull side. And we've seen this in particular, the main plants, ABP, Keepack, Dawn, have sort of moved away a bit from bull beef in recent years. And a lot of farmers would have used Kildare as a good outlet for, say, heavier type bulls. And there is concern in that, particularly, I suppose, where Dawn would be more vocal in their resistance to bulls and have always put out a preference for, say, bullocks. On the sheep side, you have even more real concerns, because that's, say, on the cattle side, Kildare are killing about 4% of the national kill. On the sheep side, we believe that they're killing somewhere in the region of 20% of the national kill. So that is quite a big percentage of the kill. If you take Kildare Chilling out of it, and say with Dawn's acquisition, it brings Dawn's kill somewhere between 30 and 35%. We believe they'll be second to Irish Country Meats at 40%. And if you add in Keepack, which you believe would be around 20% as well, you'd see three players now having 95, 96% of the total sheep market. And a real concern is the fact that if we look at, say, for the last 2-3 years, unfortunately on the sheep side, we don't have the same transparency as we do on the beef with regards prices paid, reported by the Department of Agriculture. What we do have, or what we can go on, is the base quotes that factories offer every week. And consistently, Kildare Chilling have been 10 to 20 cent above competing plants. And that has a big impact on the whole industry. So not only to the farmers that are selling in there, but if you take all of the country sheep producer groups who work off a payment mechanism of generally say the average of the base quotes and a premium on top of that, then any time till their children don't quote or this they see their returns maybe fall by 10 to 15 cents depending on the week. So real important and real concern there on the sheep side. And I think that it's something that farmers will be watching very closely in the coming weeks.
Yeah, it's definitely could see it being the talk of the March this week, Darren, on that news from Kildare. But I'm sure we'll have more on it as that deal becomes final over the coming weeks and months as well. And we've more on page 8 there from Adam as well on the full detail of that story. But on page 7, you report that the spotlight is on lamb imports as sheep farmers face crisis. Look, there was a number of sheep meetings. The IFA had a national one this week on Monday there, where lots of farmers, I suppose, were airing their grievances about the current sheep price, Darren. Their Togish had figures on the night. They presented figures that showed that I think it was over €200 the cost of keeping a ewe in 2022, and that was leaving just a margin of €7. Are sheep farmers right to be concerned at the moment?
Yeah, it hasn't been a good week for sheep farmers. The figures were stark, but very real figures taken from the Chagas Ag Economics and Survey section in Athenry. They were presented by Michael Gottstein, head of sheep program on the night. And a lot of farmers, when you say €200 to keep a ewe for a year, they might sort of scoff at that. But this is taking every cost. It's taking, say, variable costs, and it's also taking fixed costs. So everything from your feed, fertilizer, dosing, right down to depreciation on sheds, your allocation from machinery running, your allocation from ESP, all those type of things. So the figures have reduced from about €39 of a net margin per ewe in 2021. So it would have cost about €160 to keep your ewe in 2021 to, as you say, €7 last year. And what has eroded that is fertilizer, feed in particular, say the price of making silage hay and contractor costs, and also fuel charges and concentrates. If you fast forward to this year, and the predictions for this year are no real better, Barry, so they aren't. What you're looking at is that it's expected that fuel or energy costs are going to reduce by about 10% to 11%, but a lot of that is going to be eroded by increased concentrate costs. Now, that's not, say, taken into account, say, that concentrates are going to increase significantly in 2023. What it is doing is saying that in 2022, sheep farmers probably weren't exposed to the full increase in concentrate costs, in that there was from the start of the year onwards, whereas from the start of 2023, you're going in at a high price straight away. So that's taken into account that. I suppose the other big thing on the night, because farmers were very fired up, and as you can see, rightly so, that if you took the sheep welfare scheme payment out, farmers wouldn't have been making anything from keeping sheep apart from the direct payments in 2022. And that put a spotlight on lamb imports, and the meeting threatened to spill over on a number of times. A few very staunch views from the farmers attending and criticising lamb imports coming in. Now, you can look at lamb imports in a number of ways. And as an exporting country, I think we always have to be careful that if we are putting the dagger into lamb imports and we're turning around and exporting 60% of our lamb or 90% of our beef, we just need to be, I suppose, a small bit careful. But you can see why farmers were frustrated. And I think the frustration itself wasn't around, say, lamb import. It was around the accusation that there's more lamb coming in than what's recorded. And this is something that has been around for years, doing sheep meetings for over the last decade. Farmers will always say that there's more numbers coming in from Scotland, England, Wales. So this was put to Seamus McMinniran from Board B on the night. Seamus said he had looked for figures from the Department of Agriculture. He had cross-referenced with DERA, and he had also gone to DEFRA in Britain, and that there was no account or no record of sheep coming in from, say, Britain into Northern Ireland and then coming down south. The number of sheep coming in or imported live has remained pretty static in recent years, over 420,000 last year. So slightly up in the year previous, but not it was down on 2 years previous to that. A slight increase in the number, in the volume of sheep meat coming in carcass farm, about 8,000 ton coming in. A lot of that now coming from the UK. But if you look at it another way, that 8,000 that were coming in is going back out again, and probably another 6,000 to 7,000 with it to the UK. So you can see why tensions are high on this, Noel. And DIFA sheep chair Kevin Comiskey and Tim Cullen-Land took a real, I suppose, maybe interest in, there was a bit of discussion on the night around the labelling of meat, lamb by Irish Country Meats. It's under their Celtic Isles range, and that's a brand that sells Irish and UK lamb. And IFA has said that they want to take a closer look to see Everton is going, or that Everton is above board. And this, it's something that we have looked into in the past. It came about 10 years ago when they bought processing units in Belgium. And it's a brand that's linked with that. But that's something we'll be following up on in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and imagine so. And I think eye-watering figures there, but for me, I mean, it all comes back to, and I'd say a lot of farmers wouldn't think about it, but over 200 euro to keep a yoe last year, just she'd want to not be having a single anyway. That's all I can say. But no, look, well, thanks, Darren, for joining the podcast. We'll move on to news editor Katrina Morrissey next, folks. And Katrina, we have an interesting feature on pages 16 and 17 on this week's paper on the latest research surrounding farm sector emissions. We spoke to Professor Gary Lanigan and Dr. Lauren Shalhoub from Togish. They have some really interesting updates for farmers on kind of the latest research around emissions calculations. What can you tell listeners?
Yeah, Barry, it's something that I was, I suppose, kind of keen to bring myself up to speed on. We're hearing all the time that Ireland's farming sector will need technological solutions to be able to go from about 18% to the legal requirement of 25% of a reduction in carbon emissions by 2030. So we looked at two, I suppose, areas in the research that Chagask is working on at the moment. You yourself spoke to Professor Gary Lanigan, and on the sequestration of carbon on farms, what he told us was that farmed grasslands, so typical grasslands, you know, on a dairy or a beef farm, is actually sequestering three times more carbon than what was thought. So there are models there. There's a national inventory for Ireland that has kind of book values, if you'd like to call it that, a book value for how much a particular type of grassland is emitting or sequestering in carbon. And what the Chagas research is showing is that actually on these drained glacial soils, they are actually sequestering three times more than the book value. So this research will eventually be fed into the national inventory and will change the picture of how much sequestration or emitting of carbon is happening on different types of farms. Now, that's an upside, you know, from the farmer's point of view, if your grassland is sequestering three times more carbon than what the book value was. But there is also the flip side of that. And Professor Lanigan would have told you this week that the drained peat soils are also looking like they could be emitting a lot more than previously thought. So at the minute, they're currently assumed to be losing about 25 tonnes of carbon dioxide per hectare. And there's about 300,000 hectares of that. The suspicion or the belief is that they're emitting a lot more carbon than the book value in this case. So that would be a negative for farmers on that type of soil. We then went and I met Dr. Lawrence Shalhoub, who was at the IFA Climate Summit a couple of weeks ago and presented some really interesting current research from Chagask. And I suppose two angles to what he was saying. Number one, a bit like what Professor Lanigan was saying, the book values for methane models on what Irish cows are producing are looking like they're very different to what Chagask is finding in real life measurements. So he gave the example of a dairy cow, the carbon footprint of a dairy cow. The research is showing that while the book value is about 1.08 kilos of carbon equivalent per kilo of milk, actually, their research is showing in real life that it's much closer to 0.87 of a kilo. Small amounts, but when you multiply that by the number of cows in the dairy herd and the fact that this will be fed into the national inventory and the book values will change as a result of this research once it's proven and peer-reviewed, it's very important for Irish farmers. The other one we asked Dr. Shalhoub about was the methane-reducing feed additives. So, you know, Ireland, I suppose, very keen to potentially use feed additives as one of those technological solutions. Bovaer's DSM is the company, Bovaer is the supplement. That's actually already on the market in some countries. At the moment, it doesn't really suit Ireland because it works best in a feedlot situation where the animals are getting the TMR ration fed and they can mix the additive through the feed and the animals consume it all day. And, you know, the effect of the feed additive is working on the animal all day to reduce methane. Irish cows need to have a grazing solution. So that, I suppose, what Dr. Shalhoub was telling us was that the ideal for Ireland is to go into a bolus type situation or a feed additive that's suitable to go in the milking parlour twice a day and then work over a longer period on the cow. So look, there's lots of detail in that feature. It's on page 16, 17, but very interesting, I think, to bring farmers up to speed on the current research.
Yeah, definitely, Katrina. And kind of what we try to do is talk to a lot of farmers. It's emissions and emissions calculation is, it's all up in the sky at times, you know, so we try to break it down there for listeners and for readers. So essential reading on pages 16 and 17 and hopefully useful. Look, we'll move on. So to Amy Ford, our deputy news editor. Amy, on page 4 and 5, you have the updates from the IFA AGM, which was held on Tuesday this week. All the political players showed face at the event, Amy, with attendance from Ministers McConlogue, Hackett, Hayden and Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. You have a full spread there, but what are the main newsy bits from it?
Yeah, Barry, look, I suppose two of the main bits from Minister McConlogue's speech are the genotyping of the national herd and movement on the voluntary dairy cull scheme on the genotyping, which is essentially DNA testing calves in terms of to their genetics and traits. The minister said that he'd very much like to see the whole to genotype all livestock in the country. He said we have a beef sector that's the envy of the world, and that the starting point in all of this is the farmer who calves the cow, rears the calf, produces the weanlin or store, and ultimately finishes the animal. And he said genotyping can be a huge help here. He said he's considering how that might be achieved and looking at the funding that might be available. So since the minister spoke at the IFA AGM on Tuesday, we've established that the funding from the Brexit Adjustment Reserve could be used to basically kickstart this genotyping programme. It's understood that a meeting took place at the Department of Agriculture last week where it was agreed that officials would formulate an application essentially for the Department of Expenditure to draw down this bare funding for genotyping. It's understood that it would be used and it would sit in alongside a three-way kind of partnership funding model using government, farmer and industry funding to fund this going forward. And the latest is that we understand plans are in motion to get this genotyping programme off the ground in 2023, with some sources suggesting the first wave of genotyping could be up and running as early as July. Now, Adam Woods has further details on a separate project that the ICBF is rolling out that it's going to increase the amount of calves test genotyped this year to 50,000, and that's on 42. There's more on that front there. But, you know, genotyping the herd, it's something that's most definitely on the table, Barry.
Yeah, again, another kind of, it's a scientific development or a research development that you'd imagine will hopefully benefit the farm sector. So an interesting update from the minister there. And look, I suppose IFA President Tim Cullinan, Amy, he blasted a green-tinged government at the event as well. There was a bit of tail wagging the dog and accusations that farmers' backs are being broken and that kind of thing. How did the president get on? You know, it's his last IFA AGM before the election comes round later this year. What had he to say anyway on behalf of farmers?
Yeah, I suppose, Barry, like he did have a very long speech, is around the 2000 word mark in total, everything brought in. Look, he talked about that Brexit adjustment reserve, the EU climate change emissions, you know, farm gate prices, as well as input prices that we obviously saw spiral over the last number of years. And then he took aim at the anti-farming brigade and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, who said that the Green Party is basically the tail wagging the dog there, which is what we obviously led with. He took aim at those trying to undermine farming. He mentioned Go Vegan World and their ads in relation to Dublin Bus over the last number of weeks. He said directly that even when the Greens get their way with their regulations, they're extremist wing, and Tashka heads to the courts to try and finish us off. And that's obviously in relation to the, you know, the nitrates derogation and objecting to the Glanbia Bellevue plant, which eventually that ended in Glanbia getting the plan permission and so on to continue with it. He said that they seem obsessed with shutting down farming, particularly dairy farming, and he asked fellow farmers to hold their nerve as they work through all of this. He said farmers have a lot to be proud of, and that the world is waking up to the reality that food is the real gold. So a lot to say there, and the full speech can be read online. The majority of the speech can be read online, but more detail on page 4.
Yeah, and I think some of those phrases were kind of channeled by Taoiseach Leo Varadkar as well, who turned up at the end of the event as well. I gather he had a good lump of steak at some stage, Amy, but look, I think he was saying it's not the end of farming as we know it. So as you said, there are plenty more commentary and analysis and reporting on that AGM on pages 4 and 5. But look, thanks, Amy. Look, we'll move on to Declan O'Brien. And Dec, we've more on the ongoing saga between the Quilta deal with UK investment firm Gresham House on pages 3 and 9 of this week's paper. You report on page 3 that government is backing away from future investment fund deals like that has been done between Quilta and Gresham House. What's the latest on this one for listeners?
Well, the latest appears to be that Minister McConnellogue has admitted that the Gresham House deal can't be stopped. Now, himself and the Minister for Public Expenditure are the only two shareholders of Quilta, so it's within their gift, you'd argue, to stop it if they wish to. But there is no way that they're going to stop that particular deal. And really, if most people involved in the anti-deal side of this debate or controversy would admit that it's not a question of stopping the deal, that really it's a question of halting the progress of this approach to afforestation. So what has come out of the last week is a definite shift in Quilta's position, driven by the government, to say that, okay, what we need to do now is, rather than purchasing land or through investment fund vehicles, we've got to purchase the land by the state and then plant it ourselves. But the problem on that front is that under EU rules, Quilta are prohibited from drawing down establishment grants for forestry or the premier. So are they going to go to Europe now and look for a change in those rules? I think that is the question now. Quilta is saying that it's going to look at planting more forests on public land. It talks of working with Borgnamona. But I think that it has not done a lot of work in, or not made public anyway, a lot of work in how much land this policy is, or how much forestry this policy is going to generate. And privately, I would contend that its main driver for new planting was this Gresham House model. That has now been stopped. So it's back to the drawing board for Quilta. It's back to the drawing board for the government.
Yeah, it's a really choppy one, or a difficult one. It dominated maybe alongside the Pascal Donoghue and Sinn Féin expenses or election expenses story this week, but it dominated kind of the discussion in the Dáil this week, with plenty of debates. Minister McConnellogue and Minister Hackett were in the Oireachtas Agriculture Committee on it last night, and there's another debate scheduled for later today, and a protest as well outside the Dáil. So look, we're going to keep track of all of those, but the political screw definitely turning. But as you said there yourself, the deal is done, and I don't think they can really reverse on it now. The contract is signed, but it's all in the context of a developing land market and the various players in the Irish land market at the moment, but plenty of interesting reading on that one on pages 3 and 9. Thanks for joining the podcast, Deck. Look, we'll move on to our market and EU specialist, Phelim O'Neill. And Phelim, look, you have an exclusive story on page 3 this week where you look at the beef factory price league. It comes back to the competition points made by Darren just in relation to the Dawn takeover of Kildare Chilling. And you report that a farmer's choice of factory was worth up to €300 a head last year for farmers selling cattle. What are, I suppose, the main takeaways from it, and who was up and who was down?
Right, Barry, yes, the key point, I suppose, the headline grabber is that, you know, where you sell your cattle, it could have been worth up to €308 a head using the national average weights, kill weights for 2022. Basically, the Farmers Journal every week, as you know, we publish the prices that are paid the week before in the factories across all the Irish factories for cattle. We don't have it for sheep, it's just for cattle. So then at the end of the year, Farmers Journal will traditionally pull together then the whole 52 weeks, and we'll work out over the course of the year where the best value was to be got for 16 different grades. We basically take steers, heifers, obviously, cows and young bulls, and we take four grades out of each category. And as in the case of the €308 difference, that was in a very specialist rare U=3 = cow. But even at the, and you know, in the, and I'm thinking of the categories where that every factory is looking to get and handle. If you take, for example, the R=3 = heifer, that's the smallest difference. And even that was worth €56 a head from top to bottom. So it tells us, and kind of the take home points are what was new in 2022. There was two new entrants that were reported. Important prices, Dunleavy Meats and County Mayo, C&J Meats, and both of them would have done very well, actually. They finished well up the medal tables. Dunleavy's taken four top spots, or four goals, as we call them, and C&J had won, and they feature prominently in the other tables as well. And again, interestingly, the big groups, as we call them, we take the ABPs together, the Dons and the Key Packs, they would have had relatively few top in positions, but if you do look at them over the course of the tables, and they usually finish up in the top half. I suppose those are the key summary points of it. Just to be careful, as I say, that, you know, by taking those 16 sample grades in some of the categories, not that many cattle are reported. In some cases, none at all in some factories. So, you know, that kind of can leave the prices a little bit lopsided. And I'm actually diving into that a little bit more for an online piece now that is going out this side of the weekend.
You know, just there's plenty of data in it, Phelim, as you said, across the whole 52-week year. You see it with the farm organisations all the time. They're telling farmers not to just ring up a factory and say, you know, will you take cattle, to do a bit of shopping around and to push on price and, you know, to put the pressure on. That €300 per head or €208 per head, I know you're saying, look, it was just one particular category, but it's obviously a huge difference. Farmers seem to be missing out on money here if they aren't shopping around.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and again, this is and why this should be a reference guide, actually, for any farmer that has cattle ready, factory ready to go. And, you know, we take that as an example. But if you have exceptionally good steers, say, like on the U=3 = steer, there's a 213 quid difference on a U=3 = steer, on a U=3 = heifer, 264 quid of a difference. Those are big gaps. And if you have exceptional cattle, you would be well advised to have a look at these tables. The annual one to get you the overall view, but if you want on a week-by-week basis, go to the back of the Farmers Journal and they're there. And I think this is where, I suppose, the bit that farmers can help themselves in. Make sure that you target the stock that you have, whether they're the fanciest, top-of-the-range, best-grading ones or the plainest ones. Make sure you target them at a factory that's really looking for them. Because if you drop them off casually, and again, a lot of farmers are inclined to just go to the local factory if the cows are coming out of the parlor or whatever, just run them in there. And if you do that and take that approach to selling your cattle, you take what you get. If you dig in, if you have a dozen cattle to sell, make sure you look at the table, see where's paying the best money for them, and then do the sums. Is it worth your while paying the travel cost to get them there?
Yeah, no, as you said yourself, dig in and do the sums and make sure you have your homework done. But look, there's plenty more reading for farmers in that one from pages 22 to 25 of the paper as well, for Phelim and Beef Editor.
And I have to plug up, and there's also an online follow-up to it as well, Barry.
Yeah, no, essential reading for sure for all farmers in the beef sector. Look, thanks for joining the podcast, Phelim. We'll have you on again. Look, that's all we have time for this week, folks. And apologies, it's a longer one than usual, but plenty of reading in the paper, so therefore plenty of listening to get through. There's a few more bits, though, just to mention very quickly in the paper. We have an Irish study which reveals how virtual fencing could be a game changer for farmers. And we also map and detail the spread of deer across the country. More on those and all discussed by the team today in this week's paper, available in shops across the country now. A special thanks to Jerome Dunn and Claire Nash from our team for editing this podcast. They do a great job as always. Thanks for joining, and for listening. Safe calving and lambing, and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinis. I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.